Good morning, Kansas City. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez. It's Friday, September 24th, Red Friday, 2021. Stan Weber will be in the studio, starting at 6:30 until we talk to Gary Lezak just before 8 o'clock. Then we'll have the Border Patrol Blitz with Gabe DeArmon previewing Mizzou at Boston College. Matt Walters will talk about Kansas State and Oklahoma State. And John Kirby's got Kansas against Duke, a game that Nate has guaranteed Kansas will win. We'll see if he's right. Mike McFarland will join us at 8:40 to talk about Salvador Perez and the Royals. And then at 9:05, Tim Grunhard will be in studio to break down the Chiefs and the Chargers that will take place noon on Sunday. So we got lots to talk about. Jam-packed show. Plenty of football to preview. Last night on Thursday Night Football, you know, it's just a reminder that even bad NFL football is still football. Even though that was not pleasing to the eye, as the Panthers beat the Texans 24-9. And the Panthers covered, but that is what we call the under right there, because the Texans were not going to score enough with Davis Mills at quarterback. But for the Panthers, it was a very costly victory, as maybe the best running back, the best running back in football, Christian McCaffrey, and certainly the star of fantasy football, left the game with what was described as a strained hamstring and did not return. And so he was replaced by Chuba Hubbard, who had a good night, 11 carries for 52 yards. So if he's not taking in your fantasy leagues, you better jump on him quickly. But who knows how long Christian McCaffrey will be out with that hamstring injury. Boy, that was, great for Carolina to start off 3-0, but a very costly victory last night, because not only did they lose their star running back, the star of the team and one of the biggest stars in the league, also their first-round draft pick cornerback J.C. Horn, who is very impressive, and they were just talking him up last night. They were, just minutes after they talked him up and talked about how Carolina refused to trade their first-round pick because they liked J.C. Horn so much and felt like he was going to be a star to build around for that defense. Like 2 minutes later, he had a bad non-contact injury, when it's always dangerous to have, you've got the, pro football docs and stuff like that to jump on there. And by the look of this video, that's an Achilles rupture. You're like, well, why don't you let him get back to the locker room and let him be examined before we declare what it is. It turned out he has a broken foot. And so even though that's not good, that's not good at all, that's a lot different than having a ruptured Achilles tendon. And so don't know how long he's going to be out, but you lose your best player in Christian McCaffrey, and then you end up losing your star rookie that had been so impressive early on in the season. You lose him to what is reported to be a broken foot. It happened on a non-contact play as he backpedaled in pass coverage before he fell to the ground. It looked bad. And he was the number 8 overall pick out of South Carolina. And he was the first defensive player taken in this past draft. So just remind yourself, knock on wood, that loss was really frustrating for the Chiefs on Sunday night, but it'd be a lot worse if they lost a couple of their star players. They're already dealing with the defense without Willie Gay Jr. They missed Tyrann Mathieu the first game, but They expect Willie Gay Jr. to be back soon, hopefully, and relatively injury-free so far to start the season. In Carolina, they're 3-0, but good God, that's tough from last night. Although Sam Darnold looked good, you know. Houston's an absolute train wreck of a football team, but he can only do what he can do against the teams that are in front of him, and so Sam Darnold looks nice, and they've got a nice assortment of weapons around him. Because if you remember the guy, if the Chiefs did not take Nick Bolton, I wanted them to take Terrence Marshall Jr. And Terrence Marshall Jr. goes there and joins DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson. It's a nice trio of wide receivers until Christian McCaffrey got hurt, the best running back in football. And take a look at Carolina's schedule. They're out to a 3-0 start, and it ain't bad at all. And you, unless things absolutely fall apart, which who knows? A lot of this is schedule driven. Like I said, you really can't take too much away from beating the Houston Texans because they're just bad. But I mean, Carolina's got a manageable schedule coming up, and they've already got three in the bank. And so Matt Rhule doing a very nice job early in his tenure with Carolina, and it looks like they made a very good trade by acquiring Sam Darnold, and the Jets get to celebrate yet another player going someplace else and being better and being good. And Adam Gase can once again take credit for a quarterback leaving and then having success once they get away from him. So.
God, it just must be the absolute worst to be a Jets fan.
Why?
Because you look at, like, last night, you're a Jets fan. You have no real investment in the game, but yet you look and you see the best running back in the league, which you passed on for Adams, who's not even on your team anymore. So the Jets passed on McCaffrey, so they had Adams, and who's awesome safety, who's now with Seattle. So that's not in your bag. You drafted a guy. You only gave him 3 years, and he's 3-0. Robbie Anderson, who's a very competent wide receiver, you let him walk. And so it's like, I mean, it's just, that's
right.
That's the Jets, you know, are looking at that as a 3-0 Panthers team is constructed with players that they all had, you know. And also, to your point, Matt Rhule was in New York, and the Jets wanted him as a coach, but they wanted to pick his offensive coordinator. So he said, nope, see you later. I'm going back to Baylor.
Roger Sherman, who writes for The Ringer and is a Jets fan, had a very good tweet, I think, summing that up, what it's like to be a Jets fan. He tweeted last night, seeing former Jets look happy after they leave the Jets is a fun reminder that I, personally, can never leave the Jets, and am trapped here in a prison of my own choosing. So that is what it feels like to be a Jets fan, watching Thursday night football in a meaningless game that still irritates the hell out of you because you're watching players who didn't do a whole lot for you go on to great success, or at least good success so far for Sam Darnold. Hey, look, 3-0 if you're Carolina, you got to be thrilled. But, again, that's kind of like, hey, we won the game, and Christian McCaffrey's out, and our young star defender, who he took number 8 overall, is going to be out for quite some time. So, but they'll take 3-0, I'm sure.
Was it a Pyrrhic victory? That's the question.
Yeah, nobody knows what that means, and so I'll say who knows. Maybe. Sure. Jake, you want to respond to that?
No, we've had this conversation. He's tried to explain it to me before.
Right.
You guys know what it means.
Those big
showing
words.
Off. Those big words.
You don't. You don't talk
means.
Like that off the air. You never talk like that. You never use words like that off the air.
I only know what
you
it means.
You just say this because you have to watch this.
To me
people
before.
Use it in sports all the time.
Do they?
Yes.
Give me the last time they used that in sports.
Right now.
In sports, who used that?
I hear announcers use it all the time.
Is it when you're watching soccer?
Maybe when Danny Klingscale's talking.
Is it soccer? Is that what you're
doing? I don't know.
Doing?
Maybe.
Right.
This is the perfect example for it.
Is it?
Yeah. A victory that inflicts such devastating toll on the winner that it's tantamount to defeat.
How about a devastating
victory? Or you say, boy, that was a bittersweet victory, and then everyone would understand what it means.
It's a devastating victory.
Devastating? Yeah, well.
I mean,
if it was,
depends on how bad McCaffrey
is. If it was like a torn ACL, that would be a devastating victory.
I agree. I agree.
But if you're a fantasy football owner with Christian McCaffrey, you got to be serious.
I tell you what.
He's on my
Are
dynasty.
You effing
again.
You.
I know.
Tell you what, though, if you have Chuba Hubbard, you're feeling pretty good. I like Chuba Hubbard.
Yeah,
I
old think, mother
they,
Hubbard.
They are.
Do you have him too?
I don't.
That seems ridiculous.
Well, he's a good player. I think they'll. He's not McCaffrey, but I don't think that they're screwed offensively just because McCaffrey's out. You guys mentioned they have some decent wide receivers.
Yep.
Darnold's clicking. He's finally in a system where they're using him, playing to his strengths instead of trying to force him to do something that isn't what he's good at. And I think we watched Chuba Hubbard in the Big 12. He's a good player.
Yeah. I couldn't get Chuba. I have his other backup, Royce Freeman, but that, you know. It's a deep league. I mean, 16 teams, 27-man roster. It's hard to handcuff guys. But yeah,
the cornerback getting hurt might be a bigger deal than McCaffrey in the short term.
That's a real big deal.
Yeah,
it looks like he's going to be out longer than McCaffrey is.
But yeah. Yeah, Matt Rhule said he broke some bones in his foot, and that's the thing about
a non-contact too.
And that's where you go. Like you were mentioning the Achilles, is that the type of broken foot that just needs to heal and then you're okay? Or is it the type of broken foot that needs screws put in and all that other stuff? Because we've seen those become devastating injuries. So who knows? I mean, I don't know, think they know that yet, right? That's kind of – anytime you see somebody go down non-contact like that,
scary.
Those seem like those are usually the worst. And so hopefully not, because – oh, that Panthers team, we'll see how good they are. 3-0 is 3-0.
That's right.
Yeah, especially with a division win over the Saints.
I mean, it looked really bad when it happened. And I mean, it was really bad.
It's just crazy in that sport where there's all these like violent collisions and opportunities to get hurt like all the time. How many times you see a devastating injury where there's no contact at all?
He'd allowed 18 yards all season before the injury. I know it was only, 2.5 games, but still, sometimes you could just tell, he looked like he was going to be a star, right? I mean, he's the number one defensive player taken for a reason. And they had just talked about how much Rhule loves him and how when they were talking about doing a deal to get a quarterback, say, we're not giving up our first-round pick because we're locked in on this guy. You know, we love this guy. He's going to be someone we can build a defense around. And I mean to tell you, it seemed like it was within 5 minutes of that. Like, and that's J.C. Horn that's down on the field. And there he goes. And so, also the one other thing that I take away from the game last night, and again, this does nothing to fix the Chiefs defense. Absolutely nothing. But if I'm Brett Veach, and I know that the Houston Texans are going nowhere, and I've seen them trade other veterans, I'm on the phone and say, look, don't you want to trade Brandon Cooks? Do you want to set him free? Because we've got a spot for him up here. Screw it. If the defense is not going to stop anyone, just outscore everyone. Sue everyone. Outscore everybody. Make the super offense a super duper offense. I don't care. Anyone here going to be disappointed if they trade for Brandon Cooks? Who I'm so stupid I passed on twice in my freaking league. So those quarterbacks suck. He's not going to put up any numbers. Of course he is. That's all he does is put up numbers. No, I just had I closed my eyes and I visioned him. I tried to imagine him in a Chiefs uniform. And you know what? He looked pretty good. So I just thought I'd put it out there on the air and see if I could get anyone to listen to me over at Arrowhead Stadium. We'll take a break back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I mentioned that Davis Mills, the rookie, made the start last night for the Houston Texans. Glad to get your thoughts on this. As you guys know, and this has always been true, something that doesn't change, I have I've never had a neck, and so I don't know what that's like. I see people with necks, and I wonder how it feels and how they go about their business. I just got a broad set of shoulders and a pumpkin sitting on it, you know? It's like a pumpkin on a fence. There's no neck. And so, yeah, that's just it's just what it is. It goes right. I go right, you know, chest to chin. Davis Mills does have a neck. And I'd like to get your thoughts on this because this picture was making its way around social media yesterday. He's like a superhero or a supervillain or a cartoon. Can you give me your thoughts on Davis Mills' neck there? Does that... That's yeah, a hell of a neck right there. Look at that, Jake.
That's Harvey Williams type.
Harvey Williams had a long neck, but it was skinny. This is a very looks like a very muscular. It's a tree stump.
True.
There.
Yeah, his head is more narrow than his neck.
This is a
narrower,
formidable neck. I mean, Jake, what do you say about that? Look at that thing.
That's reptilian.
I mean, it's mesmerizing.
I mean, he looks like a lizard.
Is what it is. I looked at like this for ten minutes.
Just
I kept looking at it.
I can't stop looking at it.
Right, and honestly, that's all I could think about while watching the game last night. Is this guy like, you know, does his neck help him be a quarterback? Does it kind of get in the way? I mean, is it
right?
I'm not jealous of that.
I'm not anything of it. I'm just very curious about it.
When you're starting to talk about it, I'm like, well, what, this guy's going to have some broad short, but that's I wouldn't want that kind of neck.
Wouldn't you?
No.
You put a cape on him and an S on his chest. That's Superman right there.
I don't know.
Or something. Aquaman or... he'd be Batman. That's a superhero.
It's a fascinating picture.
I don't know. Isn't it?
I mean, maybe
it's almost
angle.
like in
a weird angle.
It's in Mallrats when they stare at that picture for a long time.
Yeah,
it's
a schooner.
I feel like I want to put this on the wall and just have people to come to the lobby here at Union Broadcast and just to stare at Davis Mills' neck and to see what do you see here. Yeah,
I don't know. What do you see?
I don't know. I think we all take it.
It's like his face is more narrow than his neck.
Is his face? Is it they have a small face and the neck?
Yeah, maybe. The jaw doesn't match.
I don't know.
The jaw doesn't match the neck.
I got nothing. You got this guy. He's got all the neck in the world, and I just wanted some neck, and there's nothing. I got, you know.
Well, it takes all kinds, right?
Does it?
Yeah.
I don't have any. Either way, wow, it's an impressive neck.
Texas really had to stick their neck out.
Right.
Draft him.
I mean, what do you think that measures?
Oh, that's at least a 19.
Right.
Right?
Like the old long neck bottle there, you know?
It's not just long, though. Like, it's like a really muscular...
It's a sturdy neck. It's maybe he's like, look, if I'm going to have a neck that's this long, I got to do some neck exercises.
Right. It's like he's really put some time in it.
I tell you what, I mean, that's a vampire's dream right there, you know?
Wow.
I mean, there's a...
When he was back when he was dating, if he told him, go, hey, you want to go neck? Like, I don't know, not with you. I don't think I want that. That's a lot. That can be too much for me. I retweeted. I don't know.
A lot of room for hickeys.
That's a weird place to go, but that's fine. That's what you're thinking about. You know. Yeah, it's true. True statement. When this guy gets a sore throat, I mean, he's got to be. He's got to be out for a week. Right? He's done. Where do you get a turtleneck for him?
Well.
There's just no way.
You have to get that custom made.
Right. Absolutely.
There's no scarves that fit them.
I wish I had a neck.
Do you?
Kind of. I mean, I don't know. No,
what
it's like
haven't you been able to do in your life that you would if you had a neck?
I don't take a risk sticking my neck on. Put my neck on the line. I don't see my neck out there. I don't know.
Seems like you've done pretty well without
Thank
one.
Thank you. Well, could have been better. There's no turtlenecks for me there.
I mean, is that really a loss?
No.
I kind of like
them. There was like a stretch somewhere in the 90s where people were wearing turtlenecks a lot.
I loved them when I was a kid.
We used to...
I was really into turtlenecks for a while there in the 90s.
This is going to make me sound so stupid, which everything I say makes me sound stupid. Back when we were in like seniors in high school, maybe just out of high school or whatever, nice to always hang out at my friend Anthony Gialdi's house. In Gladstone.
Anthony.
It'd be, you know, 1 or 2 in the morning and we'd be bored. And for some reason back then, we used to watch a lot of the old Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
shows. And so we would get into his dad, Larry G., his closet, which was filled with really, you know, stylish 70s and 80s attire. And so we wear turtlenecks and then put on like his old 70s-style leather jackets with the buckle and the big collar. And we had eight masks. And then we'd walk around Bob's IGA like at 2 in the morning, like we're in Planet of the Apes. And we'd like, you know, take a package of something, go, you know, how do you consume this? At the time, it seemed fun. Now,
I think that would have been a sight to behold.
Or then, like we'd drive around, and someone would see us at the stoplight, just in the middle of the day, and we'd wave. Like,
oh. Yeah,
it's Planet of the Apes driving that car.
Makes so, see, turtlenecks do have a use.
Don't judge me, people. I was a youngster.
Think of the Ben Kingsley joke in Ten Rings.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I was thinking about that. Yeah. It's like, if those apes could act.
Right. All right. Wasn't he great in that movie?
He's so good.
There were so many things about that. That's why
that movie was awesome.
I'm watching that and thinking, man, I got to tell Jake and Nate to watch this. They're going to love this movie. Oh, people go see that.
That was tremendous.
Everything was good about that.
Underrated job by Morris.
Yeah, everything was good about that movie. I was mad when it was over.
Yeah, me too.
We'll take a break. Do we take a break now or do you want to play Spags?
Yeah, let's take a break. We'll come back and play some Spags.
This is a good Spags yesterday, man.
Spags was fantastic yesterday.
I like
yesterday.
Spags talk.
He'd like to hear some Spags.
He's the best.
Yeah.
I mean, I listened. I enjoy listening to coaches talk football, but man, I feel like Spags actually tells you things that of value, of worth.
I was listening to a Bucky Brooks podcast yesterday, and he called him Spagnuolo.
Man, well,
did you tweet him?
Now I was going to record it and send it to you, though.
Oh yeah, I mean, it just catches the ear. Yeah. There's people that still do that, and it's like, you know, if you're unsure, call him Spags. That's what you do.
That's what you do.
We'll be right back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol and Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stan, look at Davis Mills' neck. Have you ever seen a more powerful neck than that? It always doesn't look real, does it?
It's a long, tough neck. I mean, like Mike Tyson's got a big old tough neck.
Right,
but this one's proportional.
It's just
is like when you see an NFL player or a big dude who's like 6'6", 6'7", but looks like if he weren't standing next to anybody else that's 6 foot tall. I mean, just proportionally, like Shaq in basketball. If Shaq is just in a picture, you might think he's a 6 foot tall guy. That neck looks like it's the right proportion, except for it's long and big.
Right. It's like it's a tree stump is what it is on his shoulders. So count me as a Davis Mills fan.
Right.
I'm rooting for him to succeed. Okay, Stan, we are going to play some different clips from Steve Spagnuolo because... I don't know if this shocks you, but the biggest topic of the week all week has been the Chiefs' defensive performance, or lack thereof, the first couple of weeks. And so what I thought we'd do, because, Andy really doesn't say anything in his press conferences. It's a lot of coach speak, and that's what Andy does. He's been doing this for a long time. He doesn't want to give up anything. Eric Bieniemy, I think, is good, and he's evolved, and he's a lot better than when he first took over as offensive coordinator. I enjoyed listening to Eric Bieniemy, but I always wish, and it's getting closer to that, that people could hear the Eric Bieniemy that when you have him off to the side, like when I used to interview him one-on-one when he was a running backs coach. And I thought, boy, this is going to be great. And then you could tell someone got to him, and he held back quite a bit when he first became offensive coordinator. But now you're starting to see more of his personality show because he's got a great personality and he is fun to talk football with. I just felt like he was very reserved when he took over as offensive coordinator, but that's changed a little bit. Spagnuolo, comfortable in his skin. He's been there, done that. I love listening to him talk football. I don't love all football press conferences when the coaches speak, but I think he's terrific, and I do think you could take things away from what he says. And so I thought we'd play some, and I just want to get your reaction because that's all anyone's talking about. And people ask me, I've had several appearances this week, hey, what do they do to fix the defense? I'm like, I mean, where do you want me to start? So let's listen to some Spags, and I want to get your thoughts and see how you react to some of the things that he had to say. he comes out yesterday. Did you guys listen to it when he comes out there? And he was on the offensive because he kind of knew what the questions were, and I was interested to hear how he approached everything. Let's listen to Spags. He didn't even wait for questions about the performance in the red zone because he knew those were coming.
I know most of your questions are going to be red zone. You're going to go there, I'm sure. I understand it. I get it. I hope you can understand that I'm not going to go deep into the solutions, how we're going to change it, how we're going to fix it, because I'm talking to the Chargers, right? I'm not going to do that. I will say that there's been an extreme focus on it. The players have taken ownership. The coaches have taken ownership. We did have some wrinkles in last week in the red zone, one that I thought worked pretty good and one not so good. So we were kind of 50-50 on any changes, but it needs to get better. It begins with a lot of things. I mean, the basic football in the red zone, which is just kind of burr up and man up, like we say. So that was the two teams that we've played have been pretty challenging in that regard, red zone and the run defense. Hopefully it'll make us better going forward. But what we're putting out there right now obviously is not good enough. I think we all know that.
Stan, the Chiefs were very outspoken, saying an emphasis was placed in the offseason on improving the red zone defense. And after the first 2 weeks, it has been worse. The two teams scoring at a rate of 100% in the red zone touchdowns. And so it's just been terrible. What have you seen? What have been the major problems, especially in the red zone, that you've seen from this defense?
Well, first of all, when you quote those stats, I think we need to take a deep breath. It's a problem. It was a problem last year. 100% touchdown is awful. It should be coming in at 65, 70% touchdowns. But they did play two teams that feel very comfortable, almost like fish in water in that locale. The Ravens are running an old-style football offense that has an extra runner in it with a quarterback, and that's what you need to be able to do to be successful in the red zone, so they're hard to deal with. And then the Cleveland Browns have backs that can finish through contact. The defenders can be right there. Spags can draw stuff up and say, okay, at the 3-yard line, big contact's going to occur. But guess what? The Cleveland running backs win the battle and fall all the way to the end zone. So you're talking about elite finishers. And so I think we got to step back a second. A lot of teams, when it's at the goal line, second and goal at the 1, how many teams in the NFL are going to throw and then throw? And maybe even on fourth down, throw again. So you're going to play a whole different style of NFL football than they've seen so far. So it's a bad matchup. Now, the worst thing that they did in the red zone, because that's the 20-yard line on in, is situations where it's 3rd and 7 or 8 and you're near the 15-yard line. That is giant advantage defense. And Chris Collinsworth even said that, I think, right as the play was unfolding. Yeah, I know they haven't been good in the red zone, but here there's no way they can let a first down occur. And sure enough, pass complete, short of the first down. He wiggles his way through and gets a first down against the Chiefs. So what do the Chiefs need to do? Well, Spagnuolo said it the best. I mean, he told you everything you need to know, and I love listening to him. He and Patrick Mahomes tell you what really is going on. They are comfortable in their skins. This is good football information. Did he call it burr up?
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
Well, I guess I just kind of said that at the 3-yard line, my example, that the tackler is there, make a play. Now, Tyrann Mathieu is the difference maker for the Chiefs defense, according to me. I mean, if you listen to this every Friday, if you follow what I talk about, I think Tyrann Mathieu is a giant difference maker that makes the Chiefs a Super Bowl type of football team. But he is about cute plays, being where you don't expect him to be, reading plays. He almost had another interception at the goal line that could have ended that drive. I mean, what was he doing over there? I mean, he is everywhere on those kind of plays. But physically running up and bringing his shoulder pads and blowing someone up at the goal line, that's not really his strength. So Tyrann Mathieu isn't the same player at the 10-yard line as he is at the 50-yard line, if that makes sense. He's your best guy. And then Chris Jones' play is to blow things up in the middle. I'll go back. You know, this is a big theme this week, right? Chris Jones playing defensive end. Well, if they listen to us to talk football, do we talk football year-round around here?
Pretty much.
Am I on every Friday with you guys?
Right.
I mean, I said all along, there's a couple of themes that I'm going to put out there that I've said forever. Chris Jones being a defensive end is fine. He has the body type, and he may be really good. But when you take a guy away from what he's really great at, and that's blowing things up in the middle as a defensive tackle, it always concerns me. And I do not think who they sub in for him can replicate that so that we get 1 + 1 = 2. No, You get zero in the middle, and now you move him out, and you hope you get a one in this example. So that and the offensive line acting like it's a finished product just because they got some new guys. Those two things are not things I believe in. So right now, Chris Jones isn't even at his best position. Tyrann Mathieu isn't a big red zone type of helper, and the Chiefs defense isn't very good stopping the run for many, many years. So that is not a good equation to stopping people in the red zone.
I'm going back to an article written by Adam Teicher in June talking about how the Chiefs are emphasizing improving the red zone defense. And he writes, the Chiefs had the worst defense in the NFL last year when opponents moved inside the 20. They allowed a touchdown 77% of the time. And also, Jake, in the Super Bowl, they allowed Tampa to score three touchdowns from inside the 20. And it was costly during their two regular season losses when the Chiefs gave up seven touchdowns and eight red zone tries. And Spags had said, if we had just played 50% better in the red zone last year, it would have made a huge difference. And so if you're wondering what they did in 2019, the Chiefs were tied for ninth in red zone defense in their championship year, allowing a touchdown 51% of the time. And something else that stands out is quarterbacks in the red zone. Opposing quarterbacks had a QBR of 89.7 in the red zone, which was 29th. The league average was 70.3. And in 2019, the QBR was only 41.5 from quarterbacks against the Chiefs in the red zone. The Chiefs had a league-high four interceptions, including, you remember one in the end zone that was made by Daniel Sorensen that won the game against the Chargers. And so you could see there's a huge difference from 2019 to 2020. And now so far, I know the matchups, like you said, have been bad, but it's been even worse this year. So it is a big
against
area
these
of
two
concern.
Teams. Right. Against these two
absolutely.
Teams. And I'll add one more guy before we break. Anthony Hitchens. I like him as a player. He came from Dallas. Everyone asked me what I thought of him. I said, the guy will hustle. He's a great team player. He's a leader. But he doesn't hit anybody at the line of scrimmage. He's the best tackler for a four-yard gain in the world. And at the goal line, that doesn't cut it. Okay, I'm just saying.
Right, no,
Anthony
right,
Hitchens
no.
is not built for the goal line. Tyrann Mathieu, not built for the goal line. Dan Sorensen, not built for the goal line. So the Jimmies and Joes matter here as Spags gets them in their spots. They got to finish the play. It'll get better, though. It will get better.
We've got Stan Weber in studio talking football on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, let's play another clip from Spags on the another hot topic the last couple of weeks. And it's the lack of playing time, especially this past week for Thornhill, because he played plenty in the first game because Tyrann Mathieu was out. But then only 11 snaps on Sunday night against the Ravens, and Daniel Sorensen played every snap. And so Todd Lebo asked Spags about Sorensen and Thornhill and how do they decide on playing time? You know, what input he has and the other and the position coaches and how they arrive at their decision. Here is Spags on Sorensen and Thornhill.
Yeah, there's dialogue on that all the time. Look, Juan's done a good job. He's had spurts of good football. But when you talk about what you're asking about is a position change. A position change has got to be merited when somebody's not playing well and we need improvement there. I mean, if you ask Dan, I'm sure he'd tell you he wants to play better. If you asked any of the 11 guys that play the positions on defense, I'm sure they got to tell you they want to play better. Juan's done some good things for us. He just needs to earn his way back. We talked, Juan and I had a conversation on Tuesday. The game, obviously, the first game, Tyrann didn't play, so Juan was out there a lot. In this game, Tyrann's coming back, and Dan's in there, so what did happen is we, you know, in the packages that Juan is in there for, we weren't in them very much. I mean, Baltimore kept us in our base package, and it's just two safeties out there. So we'll see where it goes. We're going to need, before it's all said and done, we're going to need everybody. Juan, Dan, everybody.
So a couple of things that I took away. He said Juan has played spurts of good football. He's done some good things. He needs to earn his way back.
That's the best information that any football fan who really wants to get into it and understand football, but maybe is missing that one step to get into the realm of really understanding football. All you got to do is listen to that statement by Spagnuolo right there. Fans, coaches cannot play in this elite level of competition without having guys who are reliable and do what they're supposed to do. It is an 11-man orchestra. on defense. If you are the greatest drummer in the world, but you're playing a different song than everyone else in the band, what do you have? A messed up song. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Everyone wants to bash the athleticism of a Dan Sorensen and talk about Juan Thornhill. Hey, Juan Thornhill, I love his athleticism. I love his playmaking ability. And I can't wait till he plays 55 plays a game for the Chiefs, because he will do it only when he earns the trust of the coaches. And most fans, and I, all my buddies the same way, they don't understand this at all. They say, you got to stick Juan Thornhill in. We're no chance of winning with guys like Dan Sorensen playing all the time. You got to take a shot. Go with the guy. And why do these guys love the old guys? Why do they want trust? What, this guy's fine. No, you break down everything when you don't do what you're supposed to do. You've got to be perfection, all 11 guys being predictable in what they do. The easiest thing is, think about a pass play. Quarterback throws it before a receiver turns. The receiver turns. If they're on the same page, easy completion. If they're not, the ball's flying through the air, the receiver's in another spot, and you might have an interception. This is the most devalued thing in fandom, is the trust factor. Don't say one Thornhill. These guys are going to play their best guys. They want to win, but they have to play guys they trust. So every team I hear talked about, you hear this. You know, why don't they play these guys? They're so much more exciting. They look better. They don't do what they're supposed to do. Play after play after play. They don't make the right checks. They don't have the right communication. They don't make the right switches. You can't play guys you don't trust. So quit calling out for Ron. Let Thornhill play. When he plays, let's cheer. But until then, he's not good enough to be the best defense the Chiefs have. Sorensen is reliable, and that means everything to the NFL success.
You know who I trust?
Who?
You.
I appreciate that.
Stan Weber. I trust that he'll do the right thing. You too, I don't know. I mean, hell, I don't know.
Nate's not jumping up and saying he trusts me, so that's 1 out of 2. 50%. Jake,
I
don't know. That's 2. 2 out of 3. 67%.
You maybe. Him, I don't know.
I trust all three of you completely.
Really?
I don't trust
anybody.
Let's
do that trust fall in the commercial break.
That sounds like that's Andy Reidism right there. You said just all three of us. I trust everybody. Andy Reid trusts everybody. We're going to get better.
Talk on it.
Coach talk.
Maybe I don't trust anyone. I'm rethinking this whole
thing. Oh, wait a second. That's why the breaks are awesome.
Back after this on WHB. Thanks for watching us on 38 The Spot. The show continues right now with Stan Weber on Sports Radio 810 WHB.